नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 7, Text Number 28.
Yavai vraje vraja pushan vishataya pitan. Palam stha jiva yadanhu graha drishti brishcha. Tachchudayeti vishabhirya vilola jivham. Uchadhayishyad hurgham viharan radinyam.
Yet one who, by certainly, Braje at Vrindavan, Braja Pashun, the animals thereof, Vishitaya, poisoned water, Pitan, those who drank, Palan, the cowherd men, two also. Ajivayat, brought to life. Anugraha drishti, merciful glance. Purishya, by the showers of. Tat, that. Shuddhaye, for purification. Ati, exceedingly. Vishavirya, highly potent poison. Vilula, lurking. Jivam,
one who has such a tongue.
Uchatayisyat, severely punished. Urugam, unto the snake. Viharan, taking it as a pleasure. Radinyam, in the river. Translation. Then also when the cowherd boys and the animals drank the poisoned water of the river Jamuna, and after the Lord in his childhood revived them by his merciful glance, just to purify the water of the river Jamuna, he jumped into it as if playing and chastised the venomous Kaliya snake, which was lurking there, its tongue emitting waves of poison. Who can perform such Herculean tasks but the Supreme Lord? And I'll just read the next verse and we can look at the purport, which suits both verses.
Tat karma divyam iva yannishi nishayanam devagnina shuchivane pedida yamane unishati rajam mato visitanta kalam nitre pidapya sabbalo nadhi gamya virya.
On the very night of the day of the chastisement of the Kaliya snake, when the inhabitants of Brajabhumi were sleeping carefreely, there was a forest fire ablaze due to dry leaves, and it appeared that all the inhabitants were sure to meet their death. But the Lord, along with Balaram, saved them simply by closing his eyes. Such are the superhuman activities of the Lord. Report by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Although in this verse the Lord's activity has been described as superhuman, it should be noted that the Lord's activities are always superhuman, and that distinguishes Him from the ordinary living being. Uprooting a gigantic banyan or arjun tree and extinguishing a blazing forest fire simply by closing one's eyes are certainly impossible by any kind of human endeavour. But not only are these activities amazing to hear, but in fact all other activities of the Lord, whatever he may do, are all superhuman, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 4.9. Whoever knows the superhuman activities of the Lord, due to their very transcendental nature, becomes eligible to enter the kingdom of Krishna, and as such, after quitting this present material body, the knower of the transcendental activities of the Lord goes back home, back to Godhead. Do we have Bhagavad Gita? I might just read that verse. So Srila Prabhupada has quoted this verse. From the Bhagavad Gita, so we'll read this sloka. Janma kama chame divyam evam yoveti tatvataha chakvadiham puna janma naiti mamiti sojana. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. The Lord's descent from his transcendental abode is already explained in the sixth verse. One who can understand the truth of the appearance of the personality of Godhead is already liberated from material bondage, and therefore he returns to the kingdom of God immediately after quitting this present material body. Such liberation of the living entity from material bondage is not at all easy. The impersonalists and the yogis attain liberation only after much trouble and many, many births. And then the liberation they achieve, merging into the impersonal Brahma Jyoti of the Lord, is only partial, and there is the risk of returning to this material world. But the devotee, simply by understanding the transcendental nature of the body and activities of the Lord, attains the abode of the Lord after ending this body and does not run the risk of returning to the material world. In the Brahma Samhita 5.33 it is stated that the Lord has many, many forms and incarnations. Advaita Achutam Anadimananta Rupam. Although there are many transcendental forms of the Lord, they are still one and the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. One has to understand this fact with conviction, although it is incomprehensible to mundane scholars and empiric philosophers. As stated in the Vedas, the Purusha Bodhini Upanishad, Eko Devo Nicha Lilambur Rakto Bhakta Vyapti Vapi Bhakta Hridyanta Atma. Quote, the one Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternally engaged in many, many transcendental forms in relationships with his unalloyed devotees. Unquote. This Vedic version is confirmed in this verse of the Gita personally by the Lord. He who accepts this truth on the strength of the authority of the Vedas and of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and who does not waste time in philosophical speculation, attains the highest perfectional stage of liberation. Simply by accepting this truth on faith, one can, without a doubt, attain liberation. The Vedic version, Tat Tvam Asi, is actually applied in this case. Anyone who understands Lord Krishna to be the Supreme, or who says unto the Lord, you are the same Supreme Brahman, the personality of Godhead, is certainly liberated instantly, and consequently his entrance into the transcendental association of the Lord is guaranteed. In other words, such a faithful devotee of the Lord attains perfection, and this is confirmed by the following Vedic assertion. Tam eva viditvati mrityum eti nanya panta vidyate yamaya. One can attain the perfect stage of liberation from birth and death simply by knowing the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and there is no other way to achieve this perfection. Svetasvatara Upanishad 3.8. That there is no alternative means that anyone who does not understand Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is surely in the mode of ignorance, and consequently he will not attain salvation simply, so to speak, by licking the outer surface of the bottle of honey, or by interpreting the Bhagavad Gita according to mundane scholarship. Such empiric philosophers may assume very important roles in the material world, but they are not necessarily eligible for liberation. Such puffed-up, mundane scholars have to wait for the causeless mercy of the devotee of the Lord. One should therefore cultivate Krishna consciousness with faith and knowledge, and in this way attain perfection. Very nice verse there in the Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada is quoted in his purport. These activities of Krishna are all superhuman, and one who understands this, that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, can go back to Godhead. Also in this purport of the Bhagavad Gita, it describes all sorts of malicious philosophies which poison the consciousness of someone on the spiritual path, which sort of nicely ties us into today's verse of the Bhagavatam with Kaliya, the chastisement of Kaliya. So, in Srila Bhaktivinoda, the course, Sri Krishna Samhita, where he describes various obstacles that prevent us from developing love for Krishna, particularly love for Krishna that prema bhakti in the mood of the braja basis. It's a very rare understanding to understand Krishna as his very close and intimate associates understood him in Vrindavan. Krishna understanding is one of the most difficult to understand. Krishna is the original and full manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But because his activities, in one sense, are very human-like, it makes it very, very difficult to also accommodate the fact that someone who is so human-like in their activities is also the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When we see a human being, someone with two arms and two legs, it's hard for us to think, well, all of the universes are coming from that human being. It's a very difficult concept. When people think of God, they would expect that if they see God, that, he will be glowing, like with millions and millions of, the effulgence of billions of suns. He is God, all-powerful energies just, emanating from him in so many different directions. And, when he walks, the ground will shake and, like this. And he is always exhibiting, superhuman strength and power. But actually, that Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he is pleasure-seeking, he likes to enjoy a loving relationship with the individual eternal souls that have manifested from his spiritual potency, as described here in this Vedic mantra from the Upanishads, that the one Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternally engaged in many, many transcendental forms in relationships with his unalloyed devotees. So he appears in forms which are very conducive to that loving relationship, that rasa. So in the form of Krishna, we see, when we see the form of Krishna, we're seeing God in his most sweetest form. That although he is all-powerful, his form of Krishna is so beautiful and so sweet that it covers over his almighty powers. And therefore we just see the sweet personality and activities of the Supreme Lord, because his powers are overshadowed. The powers are still there, but they're overshadowed by his sweet form and sweet activities. And that allows one to love him. just like, you know, when someone may be a high court judge. Now, when the high court judge goes home, although he is an extremely powerful person in the court, if the high court judge says, you know, you sit quietly, otherwise I'll deal with you. And someone may be a very, very powerful person themselves, but when the high court judge says that, they immediately, you know, no nonsense, they won't say a word. When that high court judge goes home, he might say that to his five-year-old son, or you sit quietly. And the five-year-old son would think, oh, you know, I'm going to have a little play with Dad. And he might, as soon as the father says, oh, you sit quietly, he'll run around and start doing things, you know, to agitate the father, because he wants the father to chase him and catch him and like this. So by not displaying his potency, it allows for a very intimate, confidential relationship. Now, if the child were to think that if I showed some cheek to my father, he may lock me in the bedroom with a key and I could be there, I could be locked up, you know, and I have to wait until I'm ready for parole to come out of my bedroom, and you know, I won't get fed very nicely. So, you know, this the judge has to remove, you know, to cover over the power is still there. It's not as if because he's a high court judge that somehow he has lost his great intelligence and his great potency. It is still there. He can still control that. He could actually control his children, but in the same way that he controls the criminals, just in a very authoritative way. He could still do that. You know, just like you know, people who do the parking meters. You know, they could go home and they could control the family in the same way they control people out on the street. Oh, you've been sitting on the couch for, you know, about half an hour now. That's over the limit. There's a, you know, $50 fine if you don't get off the couch now, like that. You know, so, you know, they can, but of course there's no question of having a friendly, loving relationship. So when God appears in the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, his potencies are there, but he covers them in order to allow the sweet very confidential, intimate relationships with his devotees to manifest. And because there are, you know, five principal relationships that one can have with the Lord, either in neutrality, servitorship, friendship, parental or conjugal love, and those relationships, there are also seven indirect relationships such as humour and chivalry and what have you, and those relationships can be had in the mood of varying degrees of awe and reverence, where one has some understanding that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or in varying degrees where that sweetness of the Lord becomes more and more manifest, and that awe and reverence therefore becomes less prominent in that relationship. And therefore the Lord has unlimited forms that one Supreme Lord, as it says here, the one Supreme Lord, he is one Supreme Lord, but he has many, many eternal transcendental forms, each with their own Vaikuntha planet, which allows the perfect environment and the perfect form and activities to say, allow the particular relationships to flourish like that without disturbing. And here we see that, Krishna, when he when he put out this forest fire, he did so just by closing his eyes. In this instance, which again allows the sweetness of his activities to become more prominent, so as the superhuman activities that he could perform do not overshadow his relationship with the cowherd boys. So, you know, ordinarily, when there's danger, you see, what is the first defense of a child when there's danger? They shut their eyes. That's their first defense. There's some danger. So he is a child. Krishna is manifesting his childhood pastime, so he shuts his eyes. It does not disturb their relationship. We're all just little children playing in the forest. At the same time, because Krishna's activities are superhuman, that just by shutting his eyes, he also extinguished the fire. Like that. So, in this way, both. He maintains the relationship with his devotees without disturbing that relationship, and at the same time, still the superhuman potencies of the Supreme Lord are manifest. now with Kaliya Krishna, Kaliya Krishna was chastised here because the animals and the cowherd boys, they drank the poisoned water which had emanated from his tongue was emanating waves of poison. So it's described by the Acharyas, particularly Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that these pastimes of the Lord also help us to understand how certain activities, such as here the activities of Kaliya, do not permit him to. Deceitfulness, very cunning, snake-like, and maliciousness. Cruelty do not allow him to just enjoy the Lord's loving relationships with his cowherd, other inhabitants of Vrindavan. So, because so what happens is that actually the Supreme Lord, he, one may question, how is it if he's God that, you know, these demons even get into the, you know, his spiritual atmosphere of Vrindavan and cause so much trouble? If he's God, how did he even let them get in there? And that is because, as described by the Acharyas, that he allows this for particular reasons. Because when we see the contrast between the activities of such persons like Kaliya, who is very, very envious, malicious, cruel, and you contrast with the cowherd boys and other inhabitants of Vrindavan, you see that there's not even a trace on any level of that sort of cunning or you know, cruelty in their activities. In this way, sometimes you can only it is easier to understand the greatness of Krishna's devotees by seeing the contrast of that. As described by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that sometimes, you know, innocent devotees can fall under the influence of persons who may describe poisonous philosophies that hide the real glories or the, you know, true philosophy of Krishna consciousness. You know, they're somewhat devotees of Krishna, and you know, they may have some attraction for Krishna or attraction to serve God, and persons who take advantage of that in order to you know, speak some very poisonous philosophy, which is almost destroying any ability they have to become properly God conscious and to develop their love for God, such as you know, here Prabhupada mentions in this verse from the Bhagavad Gita. He says, you know, tattvamasi, that there are persons who claim to be teaching the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita or the Vedic scriptures. So here we've got quotes from the Vedic scriptures which describe that there is one Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he has many eternal transcendental forms in order to cultivate the various rasas or relationships with his devotees in their eternal abodes. That is the true Vedic version, but some say they take this mantra tattva tvamasi from the Vedas and use it to say that you know, you are also Brahman, or you know, you are also one with that Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is actually properly applied, that yes, every living entity is one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead because they are one in quality. They have the same spiritual quality. In other words, we are all a material being. You know, we are an eternal spirit soul. We are not a person that is simply as a result of the combination of the various material elements of the body, that somehow a person is developed, and when the material body disintegrates, that person, because he is material, he also disintegrates. So tattvamasi means no, you're not like that. You're one with God because you're not of the material quality. You have a spiritual quality the same as God has. But the difference is your activities are not superhuman. you know, so of course, if someone wanted to prove that there are bushfires, you know, all over Victoria, you know, Australia, they can just go to where those bushfires are, close their eyes, and see if they can put out the fire, as Krishna did. Now, if they were one with God in quantity, where His potencies are unlimited, so they have the same spiritual quality, but not the same unlimited potency. That is the difference. The scriptures point out that that Supreme Lord, His spiritual potencies are unlimited. We have the same spiritual quality, which means that we are also Satchidananda. We're eternal. We're conscious. So matter is unconscious. We are conscious. And we are blissful, pleasure-seeking by nature. You know, that which is material is not conscious and cannot experience happiness or distress, nor does it seek either. Or try and, you know, if you chop up a bit of wood, you know, it doesn't try to run away. It doesn't try to reject unhappiness or accept happiness. It is unconscious. It doesn't have consciousness. We are conscious, which means we are capable of experiencing happiness. And if that spiritual ananda is covered by the material body, we're capable of experiencing a lack of happiness known as distress. So we have that Satchidananda spiritual quality. We're eternal. But we don't have God's unlimited potency, that His activities, every activity He performs are unlimited, or superhuman, I should say. If we close our eyes, that immediately, you know, some great fire will just be, you know, extinguished. We don't have that potency. So tattvamasi, now tattvamasi can be applied to us in that sense. Yes, we are also of the same spiritual quality as the Supreme Lord. We can also apply tattvamasi to Krishna, that you appear to have a material body, but actually you are one with that, you are that one Supreme Personality of Godhead, as Prabhupada says here. You are the same Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we can also apply tattvamasi to the Lord. You are one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has unlimited different forms. He appears as Vishnu and maintains whole material universes. He appears as Lord Ramchandra. He appears as Lord Nrsimhadev. And even though, you know, Krishna's activities in particular amongst all the personalities of Godhead, amongst all the forms of the one personality of Godhead, his activities are more human-like practically than any and more difficult to understand, that he is also God. But tattvamasi, he is that one Supreme Personality of Godhead, so it can be applied to him. But now, the poisonous philosophy, as we said, which destroys any hope of spiritual advancement, is what is being preached in the name of the Vedas, a false philosophy, is that we are that Supreme Personality of Godhead, and if we do some meditation or, you know, we gradually develop our spiritual consciousness, we'll once again come to, when we become liberated from the material body, we will once again realize that we are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And here also, that Srila Prabhupada mentions also different types of poisonous philosophies that one, there is no alternative means that anyone who does not understand Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is surely in the mode of ignorance. And consequently, he will not attain salvation simply, so to speak, by licking the outer surface of the bottle of honey or by interpreting the Bhagavad Gita according to mundane scholarship. Such empiric philosophers may assume very important roles in the material world, but they are not necessarily eligible for liberation. Such puffed up mundane scholars have to wait for the causeless mercy of the devotee of the Lord. One should therefore cultivate Krishna consciousness with faith and knowledge, and in this way attain perfection. So, as we said, there are many different poisonous philosophies that innocent people who have, you know, they may have some inclination to God consciousness, and there are many bogus gurus who will take advantage of that. Oh, this person has a little inclination to want to know about their eternal nature, as you know, and their eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, and you know, those rascals will seize upon that tendency and because they don't really understand the philosophy of the Vedas or the Bhagavad Gita, they preach some other philosophy, and really they're after money, you know, prestige, wealth, sense gratification, whether it be subtle or gross or both. That is their real goal. You know, this this tendency to teach people that, you know, just like in the Ramakrishna movement, one of the biggest movements, you know, that, you know, teaching spirituality. And, you know, that personality was saying that, you know, that Krishna, that Lord Ram, I am him. Because this is the philosophy of, you know, the rascal gurus, is that they teach that when God doesn't actually have a spiritual form, everything is one. There are no eternal forms of the personality of God. They teach that if God appears in this world in a form, he's assuming a form and the material mode of goodness, and that one supreme Brahman, which is without form, which we are one with. You know, we are that one supreme Brahman. We are, but when we have no eternal form or activities, there's no eternal, you know, Vaikuntha planets or anything. You know, that is our position. So therefore, if you see a form of God, it is sort of a manifestation of, you know, goodness in the material world, and that Brahman acts through that form, and now that supreme Brahman is acting, because Krishna's form is now gone, because it was a material manifestation, that supreme Brahman is now acting through me. So, you know, I am that Krishna. I am that Ram. You know, I am God. Krishna is gone. They'll say that. They'll actually say, Krishna is gone. Yes, they may even admit, oh, God manifests his potencies through Krishna 5,000 years ago, but he's gone now, because that is a form manifest in the mode of goodness, material goodness. It's gone now. But that one supreme eternal Brahman is now manifesting through me. So then one may question. So, you know, again, you know, can we see you put out, you know, the great forest fires? Can we see you, you know, lift the Govardhan Hill? Can you show us the universal form? Can you show us even a little bit of, you know, a tinge of attractiveness? You know, Krishna's form is very, very beautiful. Many of these people who claim to be God, you know, they grow old and decrepit and they have warts on their nose and all sorts of things. And, you know, we see that Krishna, even when he was, you know, a great-grandfather, who's, you know, at the time of speaking the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna was, you know, way over 100. It was like towards the end of his pastimes. And he had, you know, 16,108 wives. Each of them had, you know, 10 or more children. Each of them had 10 or more children, like this. There were millions of his family, and he still looked like a teenage boy. And here are these gurus saying, yes, that Supreme Brahman is acting through me, but I cannot display any attractiveness at all, and even and day by day I grow more ugly. But I'm claiming to that. So then we say, well, we can't even accept, even if we accept that the Supreme Brahman acts through personalities such as Rama and Krishna, you're not even demonstrating that. We don't even see that. So, and therefore they say that, especially you see this in India, that because tattvamasi, tattapat matapat, is that it? Tattapat matapat. Whatever path you follow, you'll achieve the perfection. Doesn't matter what path, tattapat, tattapat. Yadapat, tattapat, like that. There you go. Glad someone's awake. What is that? Yatapat. What's that? Yatapat Tatamat. I got it. That, whatever path you follow, you'll achieve this same result because it's all one. Now, Krishna says, therefore, that person, I think it was the same person, who claimed that I am Krishna, and who realized that he was God by worshipping Kali. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that if you worship demigods, your intelligence is, out of order. You're actually quite foolish because you're worshipping a spirit soul who may have some material potencies awarded to them by the Lord for management of this tiny little material universe, which is just a speck in comparison to the unlimited, spiritual and material manifestations of the Lord. One tiny little demigod in billions of universes, with tiny little material potency, and you're worshipping that very limited demigod, even though their powers are far greater than yours, they're still very limited in comparison to God. God, unlimited universes are emanating. When he breathes, unlimited universes emanate from the pores of his skin. And here is a demigod whose one is controlling the movement of your eyelashes, one is controlling the movement of the life airs, one is controlling the wind. But we don't see that billions of universes, so they have very limited. Now, one may worship them at, that's foolish enough, but if one asks them for some limited, temporary benediction, which ultimately will cause their suffering and their continuation of repeated birth in this world, that is very foolish. Like the lady with the sticks on her back, she was carrying the sticks on her back, and she prayed to God, please God. And the sticks fell off. Well, she had the big bundle of sticks, the old lady. All the sticks fall on the ground. She's crying, oh God, I'm suffering so much. Life is so hard. She prayed to God, please, please come and, help me, give me a benediction. And the Lord actually appeared before her. And she said, you want some benediction? Yes. And you ask. She said, you please help me to put those sticks back on my back. That is what it's like when you pray to the demigods for material benediction. Once Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was young, he used to go to the bank of the Ganges and he would serve the brahmanas and the Vaishnavas. And one day because there are many brahmanas who are also not Vaishnavas. They don't really understand Bhagavad Gita or the Vedas, but still they're priestly. And he was serving, because the Bhagavad Gita teaches that, in this material world, from the lowest planets to the highest, they're all places of misery. Now, one who understands Bhagavad Gita accepts that. They're all places of birth and death. Basically, get out of the material world, go back to the eternal spiritual world. But some brahmanas they pose themselves, yes, I'm giving benedictions, you know, and they're all material benedictions. That means they have no understanding of the Bhagavad Gita. And Lord Chaitanya was there and he was serving one Brahmana, and the Brahmana said, oh, I will give you benediction. And Lord Chaitanya said, yes, yes, yes. And I will give you the benediction that you'll be very happy in family life. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recovered his ear. This is not a benediction. What are you saying? Like this? No, I do not want that. And the Brahmana becomes, said, all right, I'll give you the benediction that you'll find no happiness in family life. Oh, yes, 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 this is it. Yeah. Which means that you'll actually get a taste, not for material things, but you'll get a taste for spiritual life and attachment to the Supreme Lord. You'll always be thinking of God, not your family business, and you'll go back to Godhead, like this. But, so Krishna is saying, these rascals who worship demigods for material benedictions so they can stay in the material world, which is a place of birth and death, and foolishly think they're going to be happy, that is not very intelligent. And here, he's saying, I am that Krishna who spoke the Bhagavad Gita, and how did I become Krishna? By worshipping goddess Kali. So therefore, when Krishna was here 5,000 years ago, he says, you worship the gods and the demigoddesses and what have you, the demigods. You're very foolish. And now, you know, 5,000 years later, God has come in his most foolish manifestation that now I have lost some of my original wisdom, and now, you know, I am speaking very foolishly, but still I am claiming that, you know, the Supreme Brahman is acting through me, and day by day I'm becoming more ugly, and soon I will die and become a dog and, you know, somewhere. But, you know, these sort of poisonous, therefore, people will worship that because that Supreme God is one, therefore you worship Ganesh, that is God, you worship Durga, that is basically, you know, there are five principal gods that will worship. There is, you know, Vishnu, who actually is God, the sun god Shiva, Durga, or Kali, and Ganesh, you know, principally, you know. And they will say that you can worship any of them in any way, even a way that's, according to the Vedas, those is not acceptable to those. So, I mean, they do worship in a way that's not even there in the scriptures. They're actually doing things which disturb those personalities. But they're saying that you can worship any one of those, and any one of them is a manifestation of the Supreme Lord, and therefore you'll get the same results. But Krishna says very clearly, if you worship the demigods, you may live with them, if you worship them nicely, of course. You may go to the planet of the demigods, you know, live out your good karma, and then you will come back to this place of birth and death, Krishna says very clearly, and then you will have to, you know, again, you're basically, you've enjoyed a little bit, but you're still in the cycle of birth and death. It really is just a bit of a merry-go-round. There's no real value in that. So, this sort of poisonous philosophy, Kali Krishna, you know, which is based upon one's envy of God. You know, there is a maliciousness or an envy that I'm trying to be the enjoyer of the property of the Lord. I'm trying to be an imitation God. In other words, I come to the material world to be completely independent and enjoy as I desire. I do not want to be the servant of the Supreme Lord. I want to be an imitation where I am the enjoyer of, I am the Lord of everything. When a person becomes completely frustrated in that attempt, because it's not possible to control the material energy, to actually enjoy this material world, one would have to control the whole material energy. You'd actually have to be able to stop hurricanes, floods, heat, cold, any other living entity, you know, You know, you'd have to control the whole material universe in order for you actually to be happy in this world. And control, you know, your material body so it actually never grows old, never dies. Then you might have some hope, but actually that's the position of God. So it's impossible. So when they become frustrated, which is a natural, you know, for an intelligent person, I'll understand, yes, you'll become frustrated, then they try to become one with God. I cannot enjoy on the material platform, I'll enjoy on the spiritual platform, I will become God. But it is, the philosophy is based upon the same envy of God. It's not based upon, let me live in the spiritual world, I love God so much, I love Krishna so much, that I just want to be with him all the time, and, you know, enjoy so many, you know, wonderful activities, you know, in the presence of my supreme friend. You know, everyone has a friend, they like to, you know, when you have a friend, you don't try to imitate that person, be that person or enjoy that. You just want to be with that person, enjoy their company, you know. And one who has love for God, that is, they're always cultivating this loving friendship with the Supreme Lord. If one has envy, there's no question of friendship. They're just trying to imitate, compete, you know, take his property like this. And that obstacle is represented by Kaliya Krishna. Now, Krishna, he showed that if someone is sincere, if someone actually has some sincere desire to really understand their spiritual nature, they're not trying to, you know, just satisfy their material lust and greed on the spiritual platform, but they really want to know, who am I? You know, what is my eternal nature and what is my eternal relationship with God? Krishna will save that person from those poisonous philosophies, if that sincerity is there. In the same way, and therefore, that's why Krishna allows this Kaliya pastime, because he wants his devotees to understand. Demons have no access in the presence of Krishna, you know, or you know, they have no access to disturb his devotees because the Supreme Lord won't allow. But sometime he allows it just to show people who don't have a lot of faith that I will save you, I will deliver you, you know, if you have somehow lost faith in the Supreme Lord and come under some poisonous, you know, envious philosophy or personalities who are controlling and manipulating, I will deliver you from that if you take shelter of me at that. So he allows these pastimes. And also these pastimes demonstrate the difference between a real devotee of the Lord and someone who poses to be a devotee of God. And it also demonstrates the difference between someone who actually is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and someone who poses to be God. So there are so many wonderful instructions. Everything is revealed, just like the sun lights up everything in the daytime. And here in this next verse, it described that, you know, on the same day that after Kaliya was chastised. Now, Kaliya wasn't killed. He wasn't killed because, you know, various reasons, but his wives prayed. They surrendered to the Supreme Lord and they prayed to the Supreme Lord, you please don't kill him, you please deliver him. Krishna also, Krishna danced on him and he could have killed him, but he didn't. His wives intervened and saved him. Krishna banished him to show that, okay, there were some great offences to my devotees. You know, he poisoned them. You know, Krishna brought them back to life. Now, you know, that is also the quality of God. Who can do that? But he banished Kaliya, that because of your offences, I'll not allow you to live with my devotees in Vrindavan. You cannot live with advanced devotees. But because Krishna gave him his mercy. He touched his head with his lotus feet. Kali's wife surrendered to the Lord and prayed for his deliverance. Kali is still accepted, you know, not as an enemy, not as a rascal, but even Garuda. Where there was some problem between Garuda and Kaliya, you know, they accept. There's no animosity. There's, you know, so he's accepted, but still there was some serious offences, which means that, you know, he was removed from that association. On that same day after that incident, Krishna extinguished the forest fire. Now, the forest fire, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that this signifies that sometimes even amongst the Vaishnavas, even amongst the devotees, there can be serious disagreements or quarrels that cause a lot of pain to Vaishnavas. We saw that even in the Gaudiya Math, you know, that, you know, some cunningness, some deceitfulness, some, you know, envy, you know, that unwillingness to serve the guru who represents Krishna, but, you know, some desires to become, you know, a great personality, you know, instead of remaining humble servants of the guru and following his order, to, you know, in a unified way, working together without envy, you know, just in a loving way, in a cooperative way, forming a GBC. When he left this planet, you manage this movement. They didn't do that. You know, there wasn't enough, love, friendship, and, you know, there was some envy and, you know, subtle desires there that it caused a great quarrel that, you know, the Gaudiya Math, you know, become destroyed. It was like a great fire. And what did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati say to Prabhupada? He said, one day there will be fire. So this, you know, this extinguishing the fire, it represents even amongst sometimes Vaishnava communities, you know, devotees can have serious quarrels, you know, which is very disturbing, you know, actually. Very destructive, you know, very destructive. And Prabhupada said that, you know, actually, externally, nothing can actually stop this Krishna consciousness movement, because this movement is not different from Krishna. But from within, you know, there's a danger there that devotees, you know, somehow there may be some envy that is carried over from our previous life before we take up the path of Krishna consciousness, you know, and it can cause, you know, and it's very deep-rooted, you know, it can stay there even after, you know, a long, long time as a devotee, and it can cause great trouble to the movement like that. You know, one who takes shelter of Krishna properly, they become, saved from this, even this danger. But what is that taking shelter of Krishna properly? It means getting the proper training. Prabhupada says here in this very last part of this Bhagavad Gita verse, 4:9, he says, one should therefore cultivate Krishna consciousness with faith and knowledge, and in this way attain perfection. So he's saying, if you understand Krishna, you understand the philosophy of Krishna, that Krishna is God and he has many eternal forms. They are also the same one supreme personality of Godhead, and we are his eternal servant. Then you have to cultivate that. If you have that understanding, you can go back to the spiritual world at the end. There's no more birth and death. At the end of the life, if you have that understanding, you'll go back to the spiritual world. But you have to cultivate that, which means that remove the various impurities and other obstacles that prevent you from, properly developing that Krishna consciousness fully in a very fixed up way. One of those obstacles, which we're, you know, cultivating, as we're cultivating the bhakti lata bij, the creeper of devotion, we have to avoid the weeds. And the most serious weed is that of Vaishnava aparad, you know, due to envy, and what have you, this creates a serious. So that will, that cultivation of Krishna consciousness will be checked, fully checked by that, you know. So here, but if one takes shelter of Krishna, means that follows his teachings in the Bhagavad Gita, to become non-envious, to become, you know, to perceive the material qualities and try to develop the spiritual qualities which are mentioned there in the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. To do that while developing friendship with devotees, in the association of devotees, to do that following in the footsteps of the great acharyas, with patience and perseverance and enthusiasm, we follow the process, chanting 16 rounds, following the four regular principles, avoiding the offences. If we cultivate in that way, our Krishna consciousness will not be checked. And if it's not checked, it will be cultivated to the point where at the time of death, we will have full faith and full consciousness of Krishna. And when we leave this body, we will go back to the spiritual world in this lifetime. I'll just leave it there. I don't know if anyone has any comments or questions.
As you said, we are so minute and we are so dependent upon him. How can we say we are good?
Yes, that's
right. Can't talk. Can't get on the deck.
That's right. It's but it's surprising how envy can cover that simple understanding. That's how dangerous it is to keep. If we're envious, what you're saying is would be obvious to any person, you know. But when there's envy, we cannot understand that at all. It's not possible.
If you have envy, you cannot never
read the scripture. Even if you read it, the people will read the Bhagavad Gita, but if there's envy of Krishna, they're not actually reading it. They can study all the Sanskrit, they can read so much, but they're not actually reading because they're envy. But we see that with the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said to the illiterate Brahmana, his spiritual master said, "You read the Bhagavad Gita, 18 chapters every day." He was illiterate; he couldn't read. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he was so much a lover of Krishna that he was thinking, "You are so wonderful, even though you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know, from whom unlimited universes are manifesting, so powerful, you agree to become the chariot driver, the servant, to protect and show your friendship to your devotee." And he would, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you are actually reading Bhagavad Gita. Not these pundits and scholars who can, speak so much philosophy and they study. They're not reading Bhagavad Gita. They're reading a manifestation of the, speculation that, twirls around in their brains as a result of their envy of God and envy of God's devotees. They're reading that. They read the words in the Bhagavad Gita, but in their brains, poisonous philosophy is covering everything. You know, if you have some intoxication, when you're intoxicated, you can look at something, but you're seeing something different because you're intoxicated. You know, it's a poison. You've taken some poison into your system and you're looking at something and you're seeing something else. You know, even a simple thing, you get driving a car, the light goes red, you think, "Oh, no, that's for them. You know, I've got the green light." You know, it's saying stop, but you're thinking, "No, this is go really fast." And so you end up killing someone because there's a poison in your brain. So they're reading Bhagavad Gita, but there's a poison in their brain as a result of some envy. But if we follow the process of Krishna by chanting Hare Krishna It removes all that poison. Chanting Hare Krishna in the association of devotees, under the direction of the guru, as that poison comes up, the association of the devotees and the very expert guidance of the guru, you know, they can perceive, oh, this, we have to remove these impurities. This is not a wanted quality. This is one of the ones we want to go like that. For the materialist, they think that lust and greed and envy, these are good qualities. You know, if you want to become a really successful and happy person, these are good things to have. Okay. Actually, they're gateways to hell, as Krishna says in the Gita.
There was one third person, Rajneesh, from Pune, from India. He had 45 housewives in USA.
Yeah.
And he was doing the same for us. Do anything.
Yes.
And he said, God is there.
That's right. That's him. Yeah, that's right.
And he had a very miserable death.
That's right. Yeah. And that Bhagavan Rajneesh, one of his sayings is, desire is sacred, you know, because we're spiritual, therefore if we desire something, it's spiritual. So walk on sacred ground. Desire is sacred, walk on sacred ground. So if you desire and you're spiritual, tatvamasi, therefore your desire is also spiritual. So whatever you want to do, you do that, and that is spiritual. This is their philosophy. Yes, that love is developed by following regulative principles. A lot of people sometimes want to jump up to that platform of loving God. Yeah. And Prabhupada mentions that in the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that, you know, if we're not very diligent in following the rules and regulations of Krishna consciousness, you know, then we can't actually come to that platform of love. So that's one thing which distinguishes, like, so many people do have some concept of, love of God and love of Krishna and what have you, but we're very fortunate because Prabhupada has given us the process. See, so people can sometimes say something, but they don't really know how to train. And ISKCON, which is a branch of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, is that, you actually get the training. So someone can say you should love Krishna. People can say that, but they don't necessarily know how to train. But the bona fide guru, not only he has that understanding and can point you to the goal, but he can actually train you. And this is where we're very, very fortunate in ISKCON that, there's a process mentioned by Krishna and the Vedic literatures by which if you cultivate Krishna consciousness under certain guidelines, you will come to that point of loving Krishna. If we don't follow those guidelines, which people usually don't understand what those guidelines are, then we'll never actually come to that point of loving Krishna, and we'll never really come to that point where those opposite qualities of love, like envy and what have you, will be dissipated. So this is the glory of Srila Prabhupada. And of course, what Srila Prabhupada did was, he established centres all over the world, which is, quite, not just centres, but, the whole, process. It, literally, Srila Prabhupada not only gave us an instruction, you have to learn to love Krishna, but he gave us the entire process. You know, we have the holy dharms, which we can visit in an appropriate way. We have the books. We have the purports. We have the, the temples, the association of devotees on a daily basis. So much service, because part of the process of developing love for Krishna is to do some service, some practical service with the senses of the body, by engaging the senses of the body. And Srila Prabhupada also showed us how anyone from any walk of life, so, the men, the women, the brahmanas, the chachas, vaishyas, sudras, from any race, from any background, they can all serve Krishna according to their natural propensities. And because Krishna is not stereotyped, but the reservoir of all relationships, everyone can have their a relationship with Krishna according to their own individual propensities and abilities, cultivating those abilities and propensities properly. So, Srila Prabhupada's position is particularly important, because he really just not only gave the instruction, but just gave every possible thing you could ever require in your spiritual life. He gave us that as well. So yes, cultivate Krishna consciousness, and everything you require or anyone else in this world requires, he gave us that. So this is Srila Prabhupada's very, very unique contribution. So we'll just leave it there. Thank you very much for your comments. We'll come back to that. Yes. Yes. Actually, that's right. But when we worship Radha Krishna, Prabhupada mentions this in the fourth canto, actually devotees, Krishna accepts our worship in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan. Because until a devotee actually becomes purified, they do have to follow certain rules and regulations, because they can't spontaneously love Krishna. And even the understanding of Krishna is, not quite fully developed. So when in all our ISKCON temples, when we worship Radha Krishna, for many, many devotees who are not on that purified platform, that spontaneous loving platform, although it's Radha Krishna, we're not saying it's Lakshmi Narayan, Prabhupada says it is Radha Krishna, but Radha Krishna accepting our service in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan, and we're actually offering, we're serving Krishna in that mood, like that. So But after great maturity in Krishna consciousness, gradually we can perceive how to reciprocate with Krishna in that Radha Krishna mood, which he accepts that service in that Radha Krishna mood, and usually those devotees become preachers. Usually those devotees, then their main concentration is not necessarily deity worship, not that it's an inferior thing, but their main concentration is actually what Krishna says in the Gita, that now you just go out and help people become Krishna conscious, and they love to chant about Krishna, they love to do kirtan about Krishna, they love to preach about Krishna, and that becomes actually a more prominent. For neophytes, generally the deity worship is more prominent in their devotional service. Not that deity worship is inferior in any way, we're not saying that, nor is Prabhupada, but generally there's a preference to hearing and chanting and preaching for those who actually come more to realise the Radha Krishna aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that, you know. Yeah. So again, these things, you know, they're very, very elevated topics, which we're very fortunate in ISKCON. We have that full scope, you know. Yeah. So we'll just leave it there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.